And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day on this Tuesday. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville, and Chase McCabe on the west side in Bellevue, while Elijah Campbell is manning down the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Doing well. Ready to roll. The new system is in, people.
Oh.
The new system is in.
There wasn't a delay. It sound. Oh, this
was
is good.
That was quick.
We're in a new era.
I feel like I can move. I feel like I'm nimble in the radio world. I'm just faster moving. I'm lightning quick. It's kind of like, I feel like I'm more, the quick jet point guard and not just the plodding big man.
This is excellent. Good. This is good. I like this.
Let's get the final tally. When did they show up to the house?
I got to give them credit. I was really worried because in the past, you know how this is. We've had this discussion many times. People have been put on the list for the whole system, whether it be your internet, your cable, your satellite, your whatever. When they say, we're going to be there from a window of 1 to 4, and then you get nothing, and then at 3:59 they say, well, we're running a little late. Now they've got a text system. Throughout the whole process, they were texting me, we're going to be there. And then right towards the end of the show, they text me and say, your window is now, your guy's running late, he's going to be there between 4:54 and 5:09.
Okay.
Now that's a pretty specific window.
That's a
4:54 to 5:09.
Yeah, okay.
Which would have been 2 hours and 54 minutes after the window was supposed to end.
Okay.
Then, though, right after the show, I get a call from the guy, and he says he's going to be there in 30 minutes. So he actually got in there at the original time frame that he was supposed to be there, which was 1 to 3. He got there right about 3. So Okay. Here we go.
That's
so,
not bad.
It all
That's
worked
good.
Out.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. You said, I can just hear it in your voice. Just the
It's so
the
exciting.
Relief. You sound great. There's not a delay. We're not talking over each other.
You're not burping.
No burping.
Well, it's not you burping. Your equipment burping. It's a lot of burps.
Yeah.
On your end. A lot of burping. Like you were just drinking, carbonated drinks the entire show. Lots of burping. None of that. You sound crystal clear.
This is big. This is just a huge story for the show. Huge.
And on point, too. Quick, it's usually about a second or two delay.
It would fluctuate. It would fluctuate. Sometimes it was right on. Sometimes it was a half a second. Sometimes it was a full second. And then, like you said, sometimes you guys were like, I don't know what you're talking about, Willie, but we got to turn the page here.
How frisky did you get with the upgrade? Like how frisky did you get? How much did you flex? Did you go like fiber, or did you just,
we're fiber. We're fiber.
Whoa. Hello.
This is big.
You definitely got frisky.
But it's important because.
It was actually less expensive. This is something that I had no idea. It was actually less expensive. I don't know if it's a deal that's going on because so many people are working from home, but it didn't cost me anything.
So
it's going to save me money. Yeah.
Now you're doing. What we've all done at some point in our life. Now you're kicking yourself for waiting this long.
100%.
You're like, why didn't I do this earlier?
Are you on fiber, Darren?
No. Is it? Mm-mm.
It's cheaper.
I've got the expanded. I've got the highest you can get.
With Xfinity?
Without it being fiber. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. I think it's like the same technology. They all have their names, but it's fast internet is basically the way to put it.
And I'm crediting you guys, though. For you guys, I didn't know what fiber was. I was like, are you talking about Raisin Bran? Are you talking about, granola bars? They have fiber. When we had our Zoom meeting last week, and I guess I was, popping and skipping as I was talking. You're like, you guys were like, Willie, you got to get with the program here. Do you guys have fiber? I was like, fiber? What's fiber?
We still, whenever I connect, it makes this weird dial-up noise. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Boo! Gosh, sounds we don't miss. That.
You've got mail. I remember.
Well, congratulations. It sounds fantastic.
Oh yeah, yes. And the kids are upstairs. They're on it. They're at school right now. They're doing their thing. So we've changed our lives.
You've turned the corner.
Just took one phone call, and our thanks to our guy who came out. He did a heck of a job.
Awesome.
The other thing that happened, you guys will laugh about this. You won't be surprised with me, but I'm not alone. So I feel like I can say this. You know when a guy comes in, he's going to put a new modem in, and he looks down at where he's got to plug it in and everything, and there are like 75 wires all twisted and turned, and you don't know what plugs into what. And so the guy had a great line. I got to give this guy a shout out. He's hilarious. His name is Justin. He goes, you want to look at that before I put this in? You know, I had like speakers hooked up that we hadn't used in like 5 years. I had a printer hooked up. I had a desktop computer that I don't use anymore. And I said, yeah, let me work on that. I don't even know what is relevant. And I actually almost threw out an adapter that I actually did need that hooks up to the TV. I had to go get it out of the dumpster because I threw it in the dumpster. So I start this process, and he says, I don't want to look over your shoulder. I'm going to go take this phone call. You do you.
That was a nice way of him saying, can you clean this mess up?
Yeah, oh, says, that's funny.
He could have easily said, what the heck is going on over here? What do you have? What do you expect? You have 15 wires that mean nothing over here. I had an extension cord that wasn't plugged into the wall or into anything else that had been sitting there for I don't know how long. An extension cord that wasn't plugged in.
Wow.
It's a miracle we had anything going on in our house at all. It was brutal.
So yesterday was big on many fronts.
It was a big cords day. You know, we have our birthday coming up for the station. I feel like yesterday should be a historical day that we should revisit. The day that we actually got it together, technically, in the household.
You know what? It'll be easy to remember because I believe yesterday was 1 year to the day of Andrew Luck announcing his retirement, was it not? And I think yesterday would have been Kobe's birthday, too,
yes.
Kobe Bryant. So,
but this is way more famous. This is way more famous than Andrew Luck. I don't know about Kobe, but.
Well, those three, I'm just saying those are three big moments, so it should be easy to remember the date, you know?
Yes.
Well, that is awesome. That's very good. Do you remember we talked about throughout the course of the season bad patches? Bad patches came into play last night again.
Whew, did they ever?
Colorado Avalanche. Heard of a bad patch?
Not good.
Yeah, 9-minute bad patch. Lost you the game and may have just lost you the series. I think your Stanley Cup champ pick is in trouble.
You think?
In big trouble.
You think?
They don't look like the better team.
No.
Dallas looks a lot hungrier than them.
And Dallas was, I mean, in the round robin, they weren't good, and it just they had to wake up, and then once they woke up, it's like they're a completely different team.
Here's an idea. When you're up two goals and it's a critical game in the series, you know, to even a series up, maybe don't commit two penalties and go down two men. I mean, I'm just saying. You know, probably not a good idea. That's usually the start of helping a team, you know, get back into it. You know, a little 5-on-3. That's what started the bad patch for Colorado, and it led to a lot of goals.
But you know what was interesting? Dallas ties it up. They take full advantage of the 5-on-3, goal, and it's 2-2. After they were pretty much dominated before that, they were lucky they weren't down 4-0.
They were. Colorado
right?
was. They
Colorado
came out and
was all over them
yep.
in the first period. But then Colorado had a 5-on-3 of their own, and didn't score. That was a crusher. And not only that, Dallas scores again right after that penalty expires. And I think where they were already ahead, right? Radilov had the one that bounced off his
head.
He looked one way, and the puck went the other and went in. It was comical, but it went in. And then they scored right after that on the one that they reviewed for a while. It was like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for the Avalanche. But they had their chance with the 5-on-3.
They did. They just couldn't. They couldn't score. Point, they were just. I don't know what was up. And then I watched a lot of the third period, and they just couldn't get. Couldn't get it going. And yeah, you're right. Right now, you said this the other night, Darren, the body language is off with Colorado. I noticed that last night too.
Well, Dallas just looks hungrier. They just look like, you know, it's pretty interesting. I've heard a couple of coaches refer to this, and I've brought it up a couple times on the show, but they continue to bring it up, and there's actually been stuff written about it where the bubble is, you know, it's taken its toll mentally on these guys. And these coaches have said, you know, you start as you go along in the bubble, the longer you're here, you know, the more you start seeing, it seems pretty clear that you can start to tell when a team doesn't want to be there anymore. And, you know, I'm not saying that's what's going on with Colorado. I'm just saying Dallas doesn't look like they're in that mindset. They look very hungry. They look like they have no problems sticking around for a good while. Like I said, I'm not saying Colorado doesn't want to be there and they're checking out, but Dallas clearly doesn't fit that mold. They look like they're completely content being in Edmonton and being in the bubble because they look hungry and they look like they want to hang around a little bit longer. And Colorado's got some work to do because I'm not sure how they're going to turn this series around if it looks like this. Well, they won't. I mean, they're going to have to take over, and that's the thing. Willie, you said it. The first period and a half, you know, or first period and then even the start of the second, they were the hungry team. They looked like they had responded to their coach calling them out after game one, but they were only up a goal, you know, and it's like, okay. I mean, they had chances to really dagger Dallas, and they never did. Like I said, when you go up two goals, you know, maybe don't go to the box. It's just discipline. Like, don't give them a reason to get back in it. And sure enough, they did. And they got a 5-on-3, and Dallas scored two goals. You know, the Preds did that to Dallas at the Winter Classic. I got two goals on a 5-on-3 and then just a regular power play. But, I mean, that's just how quick it can turn.
And
that was a 9-minute bad patch for Colorado.
You just hit on a great parallel between the Winter Classic and last night. Dallas is not a high-scoring team in general. So when you get a two-goal lead on them, that's when you have to take advantage of their sort of lack of firepower, for better lack of a better term. You've got to beat them when you're up 2-0. When you're behind them, they are really good at shutting you down. That's their game. They play a defensive game. It's defense first, which is why I picked them, because they are one of the few teams that I think has the structure, the discipline to slow down Colorado, but you've got to score some goals, and that's what Dallas is getting right now. They're getting the big timely goals, and Colorado missed a huge opportunity last night. That was a big loss. I still think they have the firepower to come back. There's no question, but playing from behind against Dallas is not a good recipe.
Nope. We'll come back. Peter Burns, SEC Network. We'll talk to him on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back around Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We always enjoy our chats with our next guest, Peter Burns, SEC Network. He does it all, and he now joins us. Peter, good morning. How you doing?
You know what? I'm doing better than I was a couple days ago. The fact that we just finished our three-hour live show, which we haven't done live shows for SiriusXM SEC Radio in a while, and I feel like we're getting some still momentum of practice reports coming in. Like, I'm in a much better mental state today than I was maybe two or three weeks ago when all hell was breaking loose in college football, boys.
I know. You're right. I mean, I think that's fair to say for all of us. I mean, we should be in a better place because just like we've learned through this 6 months, I mean, everything is fluid and it seems like it can change on a dime, or at least day to day or week to week. And you're right. It looked pretty dark and gloomy about a week and a half ago, and now, you know, I got to be honest. I know they're going to try. I don't know how it's going to play out, but it certainly looks like, you know, There's going to be three Power Five conferences that are definitely going to give it a go. We'll see how it goes, but they're definitely going to give it a go. And I wasn't sure I would have thought that a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I at least thought that the SEC was always going to be the one that would be patient and probably take the most amount of time to make a decision. And listen, we may all get to the same destination or no one's playing in college football. But I think, you know, the more we're around this and the more people are understanding of this, not only here in the SEC footprint or in the United States, but just across the world, is that, all right, this is not something that's going away. You know, this is something that could affect us in late November and February and next year, right? So if that's going to be the case, are you going to be shutting down college athletics and all these other sports for not just this upcoming season or a finite amount of time? You're indefinitely suspending these college sports. So, you know, I'm glad that these conferences have taken a look a little bit more patience and said, hey, listen, we have put together protocols in which we feel are safe. The players feel they're safe. And if they don't, they can go ahead and opt out 100%, no worries. They keep their scholarship. All the parameters now are in place to have a season. We just need everybody else to kind of do their part and hopefully keep the numbers down, which have been dropping, and that's a great sign for college football here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you know, Peter, this false positive in the NFL, because we know the NFL, same, it doesn't have a bubble, and you do wonder. Major League Baseball has certainly had their stumbles and stoppages trying to get their season in, at least with some teams. And, you know, they come back that there were false positives, and the NFL's come out and said, you know, hey, we're testing. Look at all of our daily testing. And right now, so far, it looks really good. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised by the data of, like, how it came back of, okay, is this thing, you know, that's the best news we've heard on that front in a non-bubble situation in a good while. NHL and NBA is working, so maybe college football can even feel a little bit better from kind of the news coming out of the NFL camps.
Well, and build it upon even Major League Baseball. Of course, Major League Baseball have had their issues, but they're halfway through the season, right? And someone was going to have to be first. And I look at Major League Baseball not having a bubble and going, listen, hey, this may happen, right? You may have scheduling snafus where, hey, a couple of teams or a couple of players do test positive and they do capture this, but are they going to be okay afterwards? And can you continue to resume play? And if Major League Baseball can resume their resumption of play with as many players as they have, and they're playing games every day, and of course, you know, like Cardinals are playing like nine different doubleheaders, I think, to
right,
get their season in. If they could do this, can college football do that by being played once a week? They feel like it is safe. And then you look at the other side of the paradigm, guys. The Big Ten announced today that some of the schools are going to have intramural football. So think about this. Like, the Ohio State University is going to have intramural football, but Justin Fields is not going to be allowed to play organized football on Saturday despite the tens of million dollars that they were spending on testing and keeping these kids safe. It's just, it's baffling to me.
That doesn't make any sense.
That makes no sense at all. None. Do you think, you know, there's so much pressure now. These guys, these coaches get paid really well, as we know. There's so much money at stake, and that creates turnover. I mean, it's inevitable with these coaches. If you don't win at a certain clip, especially in the SEC, man, there's a lot of pressure to win, and sometimes it's unrealistic, the pressure that's applied to some of these coaches, but they get paid well, and that comes with a gig. Do you think everybody just gets a pass this year? How do you think that's going to play out? Let's say we have the 10-game season and, you know, some teams fail miserably at this, Peter, for whatever reason. Do you think everybody, and the other two conferences too, what do you think? Do coaches, will they get the ultimate free pass, the mulligan on this season, or do you think we'll still have those discussions at the end of the year?
I think we'll have those discussions, but I would be absolutely shocked that the 14 coaches we have here in the SEC aren't the 14 coaches that we have next year at the start of media days. I truly believe it. I think for a bevy of different reasons. I think for, you know, let's take Vanderbilt, right? I mean, Derek Mason's one of those names. Will Muschamp, again, at South Carolina, are one of those names. And you got to think about, let's talk about Vanderbilt as you guys are in Nashville. It's not as if Vanderbilt, you know, lately has said, hey, let's just spend a boatload of money in athletics, right? So if that's the case, the writing on the wall is, are they going to be apt to say, well, let's go ahead and have a buyout. Let's go spend more money. And what are we going to do? We're going to invest in finding a new coach. I mean, I know Derek Mason loves Vanderbilt. I know he's a great leader. Now he needs to lead them to more wins. But I think that the athletic department there, I would be shocked if Candace Story Lee looks at that and goes, no matter what the season is, you know, we're getting rid of Derek Mason. I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening with Ray Tanner out in South Carolina, regardless of what happens. So, again, I think we're also understanding, too, priorities of what's important. And winning games is important. I get it. But are you going to be willing to spend millions of dollars in the middle of a pandemic to tell a coach just not to work? I don't see that happening at all.
Talking to Peter Barnes from ESPN. Peter, I saw... And I've seen him do this a couple of times. Nick Saban give the impassioned the reasons that he believes it's good for the players to try to play. We all know that it's hard to tell what's coming up around the corner. This thing could take a turn. But I admire the effort to keep trying to get out there, because there is a benefit to try to weave our way through this because of the value you get with the team, the exercise, all of the camaraderie, and the things that, you know, some people kind of get skeptical of these days because we think it's all about the money and how many guys go pro and it's about winning championships. All of that is great, and that's part of the equation. But Nick Saban, I think, is emphasizing something that is true, and it probably is under-discussed.
Well, I mean, Nick Saban's talking about the idea of these players, they need it, right? It's not only for their future and their future development, but also I look, guys, at the bigger, the mental aspect of it, okay? I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, and I haven't really made it public, and I just went out with yesterday. Yesterday, I put to rest my little brother, and he passed away during the middle of this. And part of that was because, you know, of a feel of a desperation of we don't know what's next. And that had eaten at him. And I look at that, and that's from a fan base standpoint as well, too. You know, I mean, about how many people right now, we need something. Collectively in sports, we've always, as a sports fan, we're always looking at a calendar, right, where it's like football season's here. Okay, baseball season's here, or you've got this, or these playoffs are happening. And now with this sense of uncertainty, we need something. We need something that's certain in an uncertain world. So I don't think it's just players' mental aspect. I think it's the coaches' mental aspect, and I think it's the fans as well, too. You know, we had a bunch of people over at this weekend around the family, supporting our family. And, you know, the one thing that we talked about that kind of kept everybody light, hey, how's LSU football going to look? You know, we're all from Louisiana. You know, and so these conversations that we could have right now are so much of a fabric of the part of the SEC life that to be supersedes, I don't care who makes money off of this. Having that in my life is extremely important, and I think it's extremely important for collectively the whole country as well.
Boy, that's well said, and it's so hard. You know, we discuss it every day on the show, how tough these decisions are at the top of what is best to do. But, Peter, you said it really well. I mean, we do need to live, right? And these are the things we absolutely love and are passionate about.
You got to do it the right way as well, too, right? And again, if it was one of those situations where, hey, listen, they're kidnapping kids off the street and saying, you're playing because we got to make millions of dollars, yeah, I think we'd all be like, what the hell is going on? But at this point, do we feel like these universities that are still going to play, do we feel like they're making it safe for the kids? So far, the testing has proven that. All right, do the kids want to play? Hell, the Big Ten kids are petitioning, trying to sue the Big Ten into letting them play, right? And if there was the NCAA allowed a waiver, I guarantee you probably 85% plus kids would sign a waiver. And if they don't, they can opt out and keep their scholarships. So, again, it's just a matter of how can you make the best choices without the fear factor of PR. And we let the PR really kind of, you know, everybody's kind of running to the exits early. At least these conferences are saying, listen, there's a whole lot more in play than dollars and cents. It's a matter of can we do it safe? The public needs this. The schools need this. The kids need this. Let's take our time and exhaust every opportunity to play rather than just taking the ball and going home.
Peter Burns of the SEC Network is with us on Darren Donick and Chase. And so looking at the actual football schedule, the SEC schedule, I'm excited, just like a lot of people, to see if they're able to complete it, an all-SEC schedule. But we always know that, you know, it's a gauntlet in college football, even with a regular schedule. Do you think that that it's still Alabama, that they're still the, even though LSU's the defending champions, we know they've lost a lot, with the way the schedule falls for Alabama, is it still their conference and championship, however that turns out, to lose?
I don't necessarily buy that. I think that we've gotten into the idea of Bama's just Bama because that's what Saban has built, and there's no idea, you know, there's no, there hasn't been this fallout of a, you know, oh my goodness, now they go 7-5 or something like that. But I mean, there was a change, right? And I mean, I think one of the things that people aren't looking into is the fact of, like, LSU did not lose their offensive coordinator. Yes, they lost Joe Burrow, and everyone talks about Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator, but you get a kid named Miles Brennan who's been there, it seems like hell, like his 11th year of eligibility that he's been waiting for this moment, that he's coming back, he's excited about this offense, and the fact that LSU was able to draw Vandy in Missouri – I think makes that a little bit of a more interesting race in the SEC West. And then you combine that with Florida and Georgia, I think, going neck and neck in the East. I mean, even before this pandemic, guys, I thought this was going to be as wide open as the SEC had been arguably in 30 years. And now the fact that it's all SEC versus SEC, good on good, I mean, holy hell, buckle up. I mean, you may have an 8-2 team that wins the conference, and that still might be good enough to be in the college football playoff because the best football's played in this conference.
Obviously, around here, you know, Vanderbilt's in Nashville, but so many Tennessee fans, it being so close to here, Knoxville being not that far away. And I can remember after 3 weeks last year, we're sitting there talking, is Jeremy Pruitt going to make it to the end of the season, or is he going to get fired? Hmm. They turned things around. Now, all of a sudden, the conversation becomes, okay, they got something to build upon. What is realistic? With an all-SEC schedule, one, what is realistic for Tennessee? And two, would you equate like an 8-win season to being a 6-win season with this all-SEC schedule? And would that be good enough for Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's about, I mean, first of all, free Cade Mays. How the fact that Cade Mays is not eligible is the biggest joke, and don't even get me started about that. We can go another 30 minutes on that. But, yeah, I mean, the second longest winning streak in the country right now with the Vols. And I do think of it, yeah, this should be a season that, hey, if you want to act like you're there, you win 7 games. You want to talk. I mean, I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's into knowing Pruitt. He ain't a rah-rah, you know, hey, we got a ribbon for participating. He wants to compete, and he thinks that they could potentially win 7 games in this season. And you need to show that right off the bat. I mean, you guys know how recruiting works. You either walk the walk or you get left behind. And so I guess it would be okay if you just won 6, but show me 7 wins at least. Show me 8 wins. I mean, shock some people this year. You need to have that win against Florida or Georgia to make people say, you know what, Rocky Top's going to be great again. And I think he'll build it on a more solid foundation than Butch had it. Butch could talk the talk. I just think that it wasn't the right guys that were fit for his program. I think Pruitt's building it from the inside out, and that's one of the reasons why I would like to see Cade Mays become eligible. I'd like to see Trey Smith be able to play on that offensive line, which I think could do some great things this season.
Peter, before my last question, I do want to say sorry for your loss and appreciate you joining us today. You certainly did not have to do that, but it's always good to have you on.
That.
Yeah, of the team, you just brought up Tennessee and shocking people. So of all the teams in the SEC that you would put in the category of, all right, they're probably not picked to do a whole lot, and I'm not saying Tennessee's one of those. Who could shock us, though? Is it Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss in his first year? What team do you think could have the biggest shock factor to the conference?
Well, I say two things. One, Tennessee, I think, could be one of those teams. But the other two teams I look at for different reasons is one, Kentucky. I think Kentucky, I mean, the idea that they're going to only win 4.5 games, I think that's a new over and under that Vegas puts on them, I think is laughable. And if I'm Mark Stoops, I'm pissed off because I take that blue-collar mentality that he's been recruiting well on with Eddie Grant, and now they get Terry Wilson, and they might get Joey Gatewood become eligible. I think that they have maybe one of the best offensive lines outside of maybe Alabama right now in the SEC and one of the top 5 in the country. I think Kentucky is that team that's going to be good. Also, offensively, I know defensively they're going to be an absolute dumpster fire, but offensively, I think Arkansas is going to be fun to watch. Trey Burch, Trey Knox, you've got Rakeem Boyd, you got Felipe Franks. So, I mean, you know, if Sam Pittman and Kendall Briles, who's his new offensive coordinator, I don't know how many games they win, But I think that that team that offensively, just like Lane Kiffin and just like Mike Leach, they're going to be fun to watch. Now, defensively, they don't have a shot right now because they just don't have the beef right now. But I think that's going to be kind of a fun team that we're going to go back and look and go, oh, okay, this is, looks a little bit what we thought Chad Morris was going to bring to Fayetteville.
Last thing real quick, go back on the Kentucky thing. I'll be the first to admit, I didn't see it from Stoops. I watched the first couple years, and I'm like, I know he can recruit, but I just wasn't impressed with his in-game management as a coach. He's obviously gotten better every year. How has he been able to get that? I know because I grew up in Lexington. I know how difficult that job is in football. I get it. And there hasn't been a whole lot of winning over decades. How's he been able to get to this point where he's really – feel like he's turned a corner and he's doing things we haven't seen a Kentucky coach do in a long time?
Because Stoops is a badass. And the reason why I say that is that when he first got to Lexington, I was the same way. I'm like, I don't know if I'm buying Stoops. And I think Stoops fell into the idea that, hey, to win in Lexington, you need to have this Tim Couch kind of gimmicky offense, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point, he was like, you know what? If I'm going to go out and I'm going to get fired, I'm going to do this my way. We're going to run the rock. I'm a Ohio kind of guy. I'm going to recruit that little Rust Belt area, and we're just going to beat the ever-living crap out of you in back alley brawl. And I think that's why they got Josh Allen. They got guys like Benny Snell. They've been able to recruit really well and have that mentality. And I think he's like, listen, we're going to run the ball. You know it. I know it. We're going to have a great offensive line. If you can stop it, great. No one could stop him last year with Lynn Bowden Jr. Like, you knew Lynn Bowden Jr. was not going to pass the ball at all, and yet he still ripped into teams. And so I think that's when he decided, hey, this is who I am. This is the style of ball. He was a lot more comfortable. And I think he, like kind of like Dan Mullen at Mississippi State, he likes being pissed off. And I think that's what he was when everybody talks about, oh, Kentucky's not that good. They're going to be an issue this year.
Isn't that amazing? The Ohio border is just over an hour from that campus, and yet, for whatever reason, most of the coaches they've had have always gone south. They've never thought about going north to recruit. I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. You think about all the players that come out of that state, and he's done it well. Like you said, that's a great point by you. Hey, we're thinking about you and your family. Thanks for doing this. As always, continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, thanks for giving me an outlet. Again, football is a distraction we all need, so that's 15 minutes. I don't have to stew on other things. So I appreciate you guys having me on. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Peter Burns, SEC Network. We do appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. We'll talk some college football on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I really appreciate the fact that we have a lot of people out there working really hard. Because this is about the players. When it comes, it's not about everybody acts like, you know, we want to play for the money. We want to play for the players. I want to play for the players. We have a lot of guys on our team that can create a lot of value for themselves by playing this season. We can create a lot of value, and these guys have worked very hard to try to create and accomplish something as a team. All those things to me are important to the players, and I want to play for the players. I know it's important to the fans. I love our fans. I love the way they support our team. They're a part of our team. We want them to continue to be a part of our team in whatever way that they can. But this is really about providing an opportunity for the players if we can do it in a safe way.
It's not about the money. It's about the players, according to Little Nicky. Nick Saban right there. Not about the money. It's about the players. I believe half of that. I believe that there is something for the players, and that is meaningful, as we just had a conversation with Peter Burns that was pretty sad to hear about his brother, and that stuff is real, and I believe that. I have seen it affect my house with my 8-year-old who's never complained about school, and he just started third grade, and he's going to school, and he's got a really small class because so far, although – kids are starting to trickle in, it seems like every day, but it's a really small class. And he says he doesn't like school. It's long. He complains about it. He's never done that. He's always loved school, never complained about learning. And I just think it's simply because he's been out of whack for 6 months. He just simply doesn't want to get up. He doesn't want a routine. He's like, man, I enjoy getting up just playing video games or going and doing whatever I wanted to every day. That affects – he's eight. That affected him in that way. That's minor compared to a lot of this stuff. As you get older, when they're, you know, teenagers or young adults, it affects people in a different way. And that's why I've been pretty consistent with my message. I want to do everything safe and do things the right way, but sitting in our homes is not the answer. It just simply isn't. And doing nothing, opening nothing up is not the answer. And this is a prime example. There's got to be some type of normalcy. You've got to do something. You can't just sit and stare at walls because it is going to affect people. It does affect everybody. I'm not saying it affects it. And, you know, it hasn't done anything to me, but I understand and I recognize that it does do things to others. Like I said, it's on a minor, small scale. My son's never complained about school. He's been in school for a week and 2 days. A week and a day, actually. Today would be a week and 2 days. And he complains about it. They're like, I hate school. I don't really want to go to school. He's never done that. Why? It's long. It's probably because it's a small class. He's bored. And, you know, he's been out of whack for 6 months. So I get it. He'll grow out of it. He'll stop saying that. He's going to do this early on. And then, you know, he will. And once this becomes routine again, I think it'll fade away. But it's back. It's about getting back into a routine, which I think is vitally important on many levels for a lot of people. And so I do agree with that on Nick Saban. Like, I do believe he's genuine, but, I mean, I'm sorry. Don't get me to believe this is not about money either. I mean, come on.
Sure.
It can be about both.
Yeah.
But don't act like it's not about the money, because the money does play a big part in this. But I also believe the other part, too. I do. And I believe that he means that when he says that, like a lot of coaches. They see it. They've seen the same stuff I've seen with my I've told the story on the show. I mean, I've got 8-year-olds, just turned 9-year-olds, and early on in all this, I saw change. They were different. Some of these kids were different than what I was accustomed to seeing them be like, just because I think they were all out of whack with all of this. Now, that's gone away, but there for a while, they had some – I talk about bad patches. They had some bad patches. I'm like, who is this kid? What's going on? You know, you just had to chalk it up to all the weirdness going on in 2020.
Yeah, you said a lot there, Darren. There's a lot of different layers to this, and they all do sort of come back to our everyday life, right? What Nick Saban says, I think you drew a good parallel. All of us that are parents are struggling with that, right? The balance of staying safe, doing what we're supposed to do to stay safe, but also wanting to live life and have that structure, that huge emotional development that's going on. I've got two high schoolers, right? They're online right now, but they're desperately hoping that they can play their seasons. You know, they want to know when's the next practice. How do we do practice? How do we do it safe? All of those things. It's worth trying to make that happen. You can always pull back, right? But and I think it's good to go slow and progress slowly up to playing games and things. But I think Nick Saban, he's wrong to say it's not about the money. I agree with that 100%. There's a huge financial stake in this. But he is right. I believe he is 100% right that there is huge value. And I think sometimes we misinterpret creating wealth or what did he say? Creating value for themselves by playing. That's not just getting on the stepping stone towards the NFL. That's one example. But creating value can mean not monetary value, but just growth as a person. You know, we've got to keep trying to do that where we can. And so that it's threading the needle, right? You've heard me on different we say a lot of things on the show, and I'm trying to strike that balance with my viewpoints on this, and it is tough. Nobody's ever had to go through this before, but I do think we've got to make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep emotional development, physical development, teamwork, all of these things that come with playing your sports. And I think you can take it to the next level, like you did, Darren, and talk about school. How important it is to try to do as much as you can school-wise that you possibly can to keep that growth and development going.
Well, and Darren, you brought up that, how Maddox feels about school, that, he's bored and doesn't like it. And that immediately hit home with me because I was that way in normal times, that the school part, just going to class, like I had to have other things. I had to have my activities that I were a part of, whether it was the band or, sports or what have you. Like they were just, and that's all missing, whether it's virtual or even going, in some places. I mean, I know a lot of other counties have started fall sports, played high school football, but the discussion right now is Metro going to have a season? And what I think where I agree with Coach Saban is that people need that. Like these guys need that. They need that activity to help them get through the other things that are going on. And I think some people lose sight of that. I'm not going to say everybody, but some people lose sight of that, of just that it's more than just going out playing a game because we want to be entertained by a football game. It's the players that need that escape from reality, or they're just not a great student, and so it helps make them a better student because they know they have that, and so it's the motivation tactic. I mean, my parents used to use that on me. Well, if you want to play in the band and want to get a guitar, then you have to have a B average. So guess what? I tried harder in school because I wanted to learn how to play guitar. That's how I learned how to play guitar. So it all works together, and not having some of these activities right now, I think, hurt that. So you hit home with that, your comments about your son.
Chase, you were saying last night to us, you were hearing the rumors, and apparently this is going on right now. I guess a discussion about Metro, do you shut down the season in the Metro schools? I think that would be a terrible decision to make today, right?
I am
not against taking it slow, seeing what happens, but to make that decision today to me would be a terrible decision, because there's so much benefit you can have by having some semblance of a season and keeping the everyday routine, as we were saying, being as safe as you can. I was Mr. Safe Guy on Friday before the high school games, right? I tweeted out the picture, and I did not mean to single out the Mount Juliet student section. It just happened to be what was on TV. I'm going to continue to say we got to do this right, right? If we're going to play, let's take every precaution we can to lower the risk, knowing that there is a little risk involved in playing. But I am for playing. I really want to see the kids play if there's a way to do it. And you can't shut it down right now. You cannot do it. Now, if you want to take a couple more weeks in Metro, play it safe, err on the side of caution a little bit, but keep the hope alive that you can do it. Because I believe that enough sports have been played across the country to know that it's been going on,
right?
Not at a school level all summer long. Not all summer long, but basically since June, a lot has been played across the country. So let's keep doing the research on what can happen if we do it right, if we take the measures we need to take.
But other school districts are trying, like Rutherford County, they're playing.
Obviously,
Williamson County, they're playing. I mean, so my whole thing is, if you try it and you realize, okay, it's too much, we have to bail, I understand that. But at least you tried. Just sitting there doing nothing, when I can look around and give you examples of, I mean, it goes back to our conversation about the stadium and letting fans in. Okay, well, I can give you examples in our state of where they've done it, and so far it's worked. The University of Tennessee, they're going to let fans in. So why not try it? If you realize, okay, can't happen, not going to work, we tried it too much. You have to leave it up to people to accept the risk that's involved. And I understand high school kids, but you're seeing it around the state. Other districts are playing. They played Friday night. I talked about high school football Friday night. We all watched the game. We were texting each other. So I just don't understand the mindset of, well, we're going to have to bag the season, we can't play, when there are examples all around you of them actually trying it.
Right.
Yeah, they're playing, and we don't know what's going to happen in 2 or 3 weeks as a result. There could be a lot of cases, and they may have to take a look at that.
Right.
So just because they're playing doesn't mean that's the right decision. I understand taking it slow from the Metro side of things, but the rumor about we're going to cancel the season today, that crushes me to hear that they're actually even thinking about that right now. That would be a horrific decision.
I honestly, and I got no skin in the game, but I'm just thinking about all the people that I know that do, and that would be a horrific decision to cancel Metro. Horrible, horrible, horrible. But, you know, like I said, my whole thing the whole time is you got to at least try, man. We got to try. We've got to, we've been living with it. We will have to continue to live with this, and if we're some avenues of our life we're living with it, why not other avenues of our life? Live with it, try to do things the right way, and see what happens. And then if you can't do it the right way and it just simply cannot work, then you pull the plug. But simply not trying to me is unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable. That's just my opinion. You know, going back to what we said before, I mean, 30 million people out of work, you know, sitting at home, do we think that is do we think that's healthy for those people? No, it's not. Like, I want people employed. I want people to have some type of routine, whether it's kids or adults. And it, like I said, you know, hearing that from Peter Burns, that's hard to hear, man. I don't know the story. He just kind of dropped it in our lap, but wow. I mean, you know, that's brutal to know that really all this is, you know, without knowing too much about it. I mean, he just kind of hinted at it was about all of this. It just affected his younger brother, you know, in a bad way. And I think there's a lot of people going through that, whether, like I said, unless you're younger or you're an adult. And I want to see people, I want to give people a chance, to work. I mean, there's so many industries that in our country, in our city, especially our city, the hotel industry, we have so many good friends in the hotel industry, and they've been crushed by all this. Crushed. Great sponsors, great people. Because the hotel industry has been booming, as we know, in our city.
Right.
It was crazy, the boom of the hotel industry in Nashville. And they've been crippled the last 6 months. And there's going to be some that won't survive. And
yeah,
it stinks. But, man, they come out with that and they say that there's no fall sports in Metro schools. There's no way I will agree with that decision. No way in the world. Man, you gotta at least, there's no, like you said, Willie, don't make that decision on August 25th.
There's
Come
no
on.
Reason you have to make Come that on. Decision today.
No.
There's no
yeah.
reason to make that decision today. And that was the biggest criticism of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. You know, that was James Franklin's biggest thing. We don't have to make this decision today, right?
They pulled the plug way too early.
Yeah, it may end up being the right decision. Only time will tell because we don't know what the future holds. But I think that was James Franklin's thing is I want to know, let's take as much time as we possibly can before we pull the plug, especially not knowing whether you can play in the spring or not. It'd be one thing if the Big Ten and Pac-12 said, we absolutely are playing in the spring. Here's the schedule. Here's our plan. We've thought this through, and this is how we're doing it, for better or worse. But they didn't even do that, right? They just said, we're not playing.
Do we know when they're supposed to make a decision?
No.
Is something coming out today?
I mean, I know there's a meeting. There's supposed to be a meeting at some point today, is what I've been told. But I don't know if that means that a decision is imminent. There were people I was talking to last night, it felt that way, but now I believe they're going to meet about it and then go from there is what I am understanding. So it's obviously a situation that I'm paying close attention to. I'm talking to people on it. We've been tagged in tweets. I mean, there's a lot of tweets going around, you know, just imploring Metro, imploring the mayor not to make this decision yet. And so hopefully they listen to that. I mean, and it's more, there are more factors here. It's the school board. It's, you know, there's a lot of people involved in this decision-making process. But I feel like that today there doesn't have to be a decision. They need to discuss it a little more, wait it out a little more, see what the numbers look like, because you know that's obviously going to factor in, and then also look at what's happening around you. I mean, last I checked, Darren, you're the expert on this, but there are a lot of people that live in Rutherford County. So
there's over 300,000 people.
Yeah, and
that's a lot.
They're playing. So I'm even seeing some games. And some districts are being moved to Thursday because of weather. So, I mean, they're business. I wouldn't say business as usual, but they're playing. And you have to look at the trickle down effect of all of these decisions. And I'm not sure that that's always being done.
The Braves have made a decision. Looks Woo-hoo! Like Ian Anderson will start tonight, make his MLB debut.
I am pumped for that. Ronald Acuna also off the IL, so he'll be back. So that thing's looking – I hope it's a good debut for Ian Anderson because there's been a lot of hype with this guy over the last few years. So
well, what's his story? I don't know.
He's just been on the high prospect list for a long time. And, I think he's out of high school, right, Chase?
Yeah.
So he's been brought along, and he's been in the system for 3 or 4 years, and he's been wowing people, but he's still only, what, 21?
22.
Just turned 22. Okay.
Yeah, he turned 22 in May. So he was the third overall pick in 2016. And he's one of the top prospects, not only for the Braves, but in baseball altogether. And, yeah, he's been working his way up through the system. I actually saw him pitch a couple of years ago with the Rome Braves. So as a 19-year-old. But he's been talked about a lot, and he's a part of this whole plan of, building around pitching and young pitching. And, obviously, being 22, you don't want to rush him, but he's getting his shot tonight. So we'll see. They need to find something. They need to hit on something with one of these starting pitchers. So hopefully it's him.
All right. We'll come back. We will start the second hour with Alan Bell from Sportsline. We'll have a football discussion with him next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.